Wide Area and Resistance calling. Wide Area and Resistance radio calling. This is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana where the snow is melting off. But I think we're going to get some more. How about that? We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Get your donations for the radio show and donations for the POWs in. And that'll make Tommy very happy. Now today we're going to do half of the show with Might is Right. We need to do this quite a bit to get it into our brain. Get it sunk in real well so we don't get off on a sidetrack all the time. No equality. No. No God-given rights. No. Nature gives us no guarantees for anything. All you've got is your brain and your brawn and your blood. That's it. Chapter 1. All right, let's go.
The victor gets the gold. Virtue is rewarded in this world, remember. Natural law makes no false judgments. Its decisions are true and just, even when dreadful. The victor gets the gold and the land every time. He also gets the fairest maidens, the glory tributes, and why should it be otherwise? Why should the delights of life go to failures and cowards? Why should the spoils of battle belong to the unwarlike? That would be insanity, utterly unnatural and immoral. Behold the crucifix. What does it symbolize? Pallid incompetence hanging on a tree. Lo, I hear the fighters coming, over hill and dell and plain, with the battle cry of ages in a rebel world again, who'd forged their swords to plowshares, shall sweat in bitter yokes. The freeborn race and fearless must deal out battle strokes. In the wars of the great Caesar and grim Hannibal, in the times of Belshazzar, the pharaohs and all, the days of Rienzi and Roland the Bold, all banners are waving for women and gold. It is might against might, remember, by land and sea, man against man, money against money, brains against brains, and everything to the winner. Chapter 1. Introductory. In this arid wilderness of steel and stone, I raise up my voice that you may hear. To the east and to the west I beckon. To the north and to the south I show a sign proclaiming, death to the weakling, wealth to the strong. Open your eyes that ye may hear, O men of mildewed minds, and listen to me, ye laborious millions. For I stand forth to challenge the wisdom of the world, to interrogate the laws of man and of God. I request reasons for your golden rule, and ask the why and wherefore of your Ten Commands. Before none of your printed idols do I bend in acquiescence, and he who saith, thou shalt to me, is my mortal foe. I demand proof over all things, and accept, with reservations, even that which is true. I dip my forefinger in the watery blood of your impotent mad redeemer, your divine democrat, your Hebrew madman, and write over his thorn-torn brow, the true prince of evil, the king of the slaves. No hoary falsehood shall be a truth to me. No cult or dogma shall encramp my pen. I break away from all conventions, alone, untrammeled. I raise up in stern invasion the standard of strong. I gaze into the glassy eye of your fearsome Jehovah and pluck him by the beard. I uplift a broad axe and split open his worm-eaten skull. I blast out the ghastly contents of philosophic whited sepulchres and laugh with sardonic wrath. Then, reaching up the festering and varnished facades of your haughtiest moral dogmas, I write thereon in letters of blazing scorn, lo and behold, all this is fraud. I deny all things, I question all things, and yet, gather around me, O ye death-defiant, and the earth itself shall be thine, to have and to hold. What is your civilization and progress, if its only outcome is hysteria and downgoing? What is government and law, if their ripened harvests are men without sap? What are religions and literatures if their grandest productions are hordes of faithful slaves? What is evolution and culture if their noxious blossoms are sterilized women? What is education and enlightenment if their Dead Sea fruit is a caitiff race with rottenness in its bones? 2. How is it that men of light and leading hardly ever call in question the manufactured moral codes under which our once vigorous northern race is slowly and surely eating out its heart in peaceful inaction and laborious dry rot? Standard moral principles are arbitrarily assumed by their orthodox apologists to be a fixed and unalterable quantity, and that to doubt the divine rightness of these principles is treason and sacrilege. When the greatest thinkers of a race are incapable or afraid to perform their manifest and logical function, it is scarcely to be wondered that average citizens are also somewhat unwilling to risk life, fortune, and sacred honor for the overthrow of popularized right and wrong concepts that they know from bitter personal experience are unworkable falsities. Although the average man feels in his heart that nearly all political and religious conventionalisms are dynamic deceits, yet how cautiously he avoids any open display of antagonism thereto. He has not the courage of his opinions. He is afraid to say openly what he thinks secretly. In other words, he is living in a state of subjectiveness, of vassalage. He allows his brain to be dominated and held in bondage by the brain of another. From his infancy, he has been deliberately subjected to a continuous external pressure, especially designed to coerce his understanding into strict accord with prearranged views of moral, political, or religious duty. He has not been permitted one moment of real mental liberty. He imbibed fraudulent conventionalisms with his mother's milk. He listens to the most hideous lies being glorified in his presence as sublime truths. He hears falsehoods sung in swelling chorus. He hears them sounded on bugles of silver and brass. He hears them intoned by congregations of the faithful amid peals of sacred music and the solemn roll of chanted prayer. Thus his mind is sterilized by authority before it has had a chance to mature. Thus youth is mentally castrated, that its natural vitality may be afterwards used up in the yoke of custom, which is the yoke of slavery. In the nursery, at school, and at college, plastic brain pulp is deliberately forced into the prearranged mold. Everything that a corrupt civilization can do is done to compress the growing intellect into unnatural channels. Thus, the great mass of men who inhabit the world of today have no initiative, no originality, or independence of thought, but are mere subjective individualities who have never had the slightest voice in fashioning the ideals that they formally revere. Although the average man has taken no part in manufacturing moral codes and statute laws, yet how he obeys them with dog-like submissiveness. He is trained to obedience like oxen are broken to the yoke of their masters. He is a born thrall, habituated from childhood to be governed by others. Chinese civilization deliberately distorts its children's feet by swathing them in bandages of silk and hoop iron. Christian civilization crushes and cramps the minds of its youth by means of false philosophies, artificial moral codes, and ironclad political creeds. Deleterious sub-theories of good and evil are systematically injected into our natural literatures, and gradually, without serious obstruction, they crystallize themselves into cast-iron formulas, infallible constitutions, will-o'-the-wisp evangels, and other deadly epidemics. Modern leaders of thought are almost wholly wanting in originality and courage. Their wisdom is foolishness, their remedies poison. They idiotically claim that they guide the destinies of nations, whereas in reality they are but the flotsam and scum froth that glides smoothly down the dark stream of decadence. Thus all the people of the earth are helpless, seeing those that lead are blind. Mankind is aweary of its sham prophets, its demagogues, and its statesmen. It crieth out for kings and heroes. It demands a nobility that cannot be hired with money, like slaves or beasts of burden. The world awaits the coming of mighty men of valor, great destroyers of all that is vile, angels of death. We are sick unto nausea of the good Lord Jesus, terror-stricken under the executive of priest, mob, and proconsul. We are tired to death of equality. Gods are at a discount. Devils are in demand. He who would rule the coming age must be hard, cruel, and deliberately intrepid, for softness assails not successfully the idols of the multitude. Those idols must be smashed into fragments, burnt into ashes, and that cannot be done by the gospel of love. The living forces of evil are to be found in the living ideals of today. The commandments and laws and moral codes that are called upon to reverence and obey are themselves the insidious enginery of decadence. It is moral principles that manufacture beggars. It is golden rules that glorify meekness. It is statute laws that make spaniels of men. A man may keep every one of the Ten Commandments and yet remain a fool all the days of his life. He may obey every written law of the land and yet be a caitiff and a slave. He may love Jesus, delight in the golden rule, and yet continue to the hour of his death a failure and dependent. Truly the way to hell is by fulfilling the commandments of God. If the all-conquering race to which we belong is not to irretrievably dwindle into multitudinous nothingness, like the inferior herds it has outdistanced or enslaved, then it is essential that the Semitic spider webs, so astutely woven for ages into the brains of our chiefs, be remorselessly torn out by the very roots, even though the tearing out process be both painful and bloody. If we would retain and defend our inherited manhood, we must not permit ourselves to be forever rocked to repose with the sweet lullabies of Eastern idealisms. Too long we have been hypnotized by the occult charm of Hebrew utopianism. If we continue to obey the insidious spell that has been laid upon us, we will wake up some dread morning with the gates of hell upon earth, yawning wide open, to close again upon us forever. The idea of hell is in some respects a truthful conception, suggestive of actual fact. If we terrestrialize the location, there is nothing inharmonious about it. Many a race, many a tribe, and many a mighty empire has gone down into a grimly realistic Sheol. Is it not right and just that the vile, the base, and the degenerate, that is to say, the slave nations of the earth, should be punished piteously for their creeping cowardice? Is it not right that they should be, as it were, fried and toasted, should swim in pools of boiling blood or dance sweltering satanic glees with blistered feet and straining eyeballs on red-hot Saharas of gravel and sand? In actual operation, nature is cruel and merciless to men, as to all other beings. Let a tribe of human animals live a rational life. Nature will smile upon them and their posterity. But let them attempt to organize an unnatural mode of existence, an equality Elysium, and they will be punished even to the point of extermination. 3. All ethics, politics, and philosophies are pure assumptions. Built upon assumptions, they rest on no sure basis. They are but shadowy castles in the air erected by daydreamers or by rogues upon nursery fables. It is time they were firmly planted upon an enduring foundation. This can never be accomplished until the racial mind has first been thoroughly cleansed and drastically disinfected of its depraved, alien, and demoralizing concepts of right and wrong. In no human brain can sufficient space be found for the relentless logic of hard fact until all pre-existent delusions have been finally annihilated. Half measures are of no avail. We must go down to the very roots and tear them out, even to the last fiber. We must be, like nature, hard, cruel, relentless. Too long the dead hand has been permitted to sterilize living thought. Too long right and wrong, good and evil, have been inverted by false prophets. In the days that are at hand, neither creed nor code must be accepted upon authority, human, superhuman, or divine. Morality and conventionalism are for subordinates. Religions and constitutions and all arbitrary principles, every mortal theorem, must be deliberately put to the question. No moral dogma must be taken for granted. no standard of measurement deified. There's nothing inherently sacred about moral codes. Like the wooden idols of long ago, they are all the work of human hands, and what man has made, man can destroy. He that is slow to believe anything and everything is of great understanding, for belief in one false principle is the beginning of all unwisdom. The chief duty of every new age is to upraise new men to determine its liberties, to lead it towards material success, to rend, as it were, the rusty padlocks and chains of dead custom that always prevent healthy expansion. Theories and ideals and constitutions that may have meant life and hope and freedom for our ancestors may now mean destruction, slavery, and dishonor to us. As environments change, no human ideal standeth sure. Wherever, therefore, a lie has built unto itself a throne, let it be assailed without pity and without regret, for under the domination of a falsehood, no nation can permanently prosper. Let established sophisms be dethroned, rooted out, burnt, and destroyed, for they are a standing menace to all true nobility of thought and action. Whatever alleged truth is proven by results to be but an empty fiction, let it be unceremoniously flung into the outer darkness among the dead gods, dead empires, dead philosophies, and other useless lumber and wreckage. The most dangerous of all enthroned lies is the holy, the sanctified, the privileged lie, the lie that everybody believes to be a model truth. It is the fruitful mother of all other popular errors and delusions. It is hydra-headed. It has a thousand roots. It is a social cancer. The lie that is known to be a lie is half eradicated, but the lie that even intelligent persons regard as a sacred fact, the lie that has been inculcated around a mother's knee, is more dangerous to contend against than a creeping pestilence. Popular lies have ever been the most potent enemies of personal liberty. There is only one way to deal with them. Cut them out to the very core, just as cancers are. Exterminate them root and branch, or they will surely eat us all up. We must annihilate them, or they will us. Half and half remedies are of no avail. However, when a lie has gone too far, when it has taken up its abode in the very tissues, bones, and brains of a people, then all remedies are useless. Even the lancet is of no avail. Repentance of past misdeeds cannot save decadence from extermination. The fatal bolt is shot, and into the fiery furnace of wholesale slavery and oblivion they must go, to be there righteously consumed. From their ashes something new, something nobler, may possibly evolve, but even that is the merest optimistic supposition. In nature, the wages of sin is always death. Nature does not love the wrongdoer, but endeavors in every possible way to destroy him. Her curse is on the brow of the meek and lowly. Her blessing is on the very heart's blood of the strong and the brave. Only Jews and Christs and other degenerates think that rejuvenation can ever come through law and prayer. All the tears of all the martyrs might just as well have never been shed. 4. Whatsoever a people believeth shall make it free, enslave it, or corrode its very marrow in strict accordance with natural order. Consequently, if a people place implicit faith in what philosophers teach them, they are liable to be duped. If many nations are so duped, their deception is a menace to the liberty of the world. Freemen should never regulate their conduct by the suggestions or dicta of others, for when they do so, they are no longer free. No man ought to obey any contract, written or implied, except he himself has given his personal and formal adherence thereto, when in a state of mental maturity and unrestrained liberty. It is only slaves that are born into contracts, signed and sealed by their progenitors. The freeman is born free, lives free, and dies free. He is, even though living in an artificial civilization, above all laws, all constitutions, all theories of right and wrong. He supports and defends them, of course, as long as they suit his own end. But if they don't, then he annihilates them by the easiest and most direct method. There is no obligation upon any man to passive obedience that his life, his liberty, and his property are threatened by footpad, assassin, or statesman. One of Columbus's lieutenants in the West Indies captured a Carib chief by means of a subtle stratagem. The chief was invited to a feast, and when there, persuaded with honeyed words to don, on horseback, a set of brightly polished steel manacles, it being cunningly represented to him that the irons were the regalia of sovereignty. He foolishly believed his astute flatterer, and when the chains were firmly clasped around his limbs, he was led away to die of vermin, turning a mill in a Spanish dungeon. What those glittering manacles were to the Indian chieftain, constitutions, laws, moral codes, and Hebrew-dominated civilizations are to the nations of the earth. Indeed, under the name of progress and social evolution, mankind has been lured into fetid dungeons where it labors unceasingly and for naught in darkness, despair, and shame. Like that Spanish lieutenant, the masters of the earth first flatter their dupes in order to more easily enchain them. Who talks nowadays of the sovereign people without a laugh of derision? And yet it was once thought to be a term full of significance. Their sovereignty is now acknowledged sham, and their freedom a dream. The sovereign people be damned. It is clear, therefore, that the man or nation that would retain liberty or be really safe must accept no formula as final, must trust in nothing written or unwritten, living or dead, must believe neither in special Jehovahs nor weeping saviors, neither in raging devils nor in devilish philosophies, neither in ghosts, nor in idols, nor in laws, nor in woman, nor in man. O threats of hell and hopes of paradise, one thing at least is certain, this life flies. One thing is certain, and all the rest is lies. The flower that once has bloomed forever dies. 5. He who saith unto himself, I must believe, I must not question, is not a man, but a mere pusillanimous mental gelding. He who believes because it has been handed down is a menial in his heart, and he who believes because it has been written is a fool in his folly. Sagacious spirits doubt all things and hold fast only to that which is demonstrably true. The rules of life are not to be found in Korans, Bibles, Decalogues, and Constitutions, but rather the rules of decadence and death. The law of laws is not written in Hebrew consonants or upon tables of brass and stone, but in every man's own heart. He who obeys any standard of right and wrong, but the one set up by his own conscience, betrays himself into the hands of his enemies, who are ever laying in wait to bind him to their millstones. And generally a man's most dangerous enemies are his neighbors. Masterful men laugh with contempt at spiritual thunders and have no occasion to dread the decisions of any human tribunal. They are above and beyond all that. Laws and regulations are only for conquered vassals. The free man does not require them. He may manufacture and post up Decalogue regulations to bind and control dependents with, but he does not himself bow down before those inventions of his own hands, except as a lure. Statute books and golden rules were made to fetter slaves and fools. Very useful are they for controlling the herds of sentenced convicts, who fill the factories and cultivate the fields. All moral principles, therefore, are the servitors, not the masters of the strong. Power made moral codes, and power abrogates them. A man is under no obligation to obey anything or anybody. It is only serving men that must obey, because they are caitiffs by birth, breeding, and condition. Morals are only required in an immoral community, that is to say, a community held in a state of conquest. Fear God, bridle the spirit, and obey the law is advice most excellent, as from a philosopher to a yokel. But when directed in all earnestness at a man of inherent might, he smiles to himself in silent scorn. Full well he knows that in actual life the path to victory and renown does not lie through Gethsemanes, but over fallen enemies, the ruins of rival combines, through Alcidamas, Meekness of spirit is regarded by him as a convenient superstition, very useful for regulating the lives of his servants, his women, and his children, but otherwise inoperative. "I rest my hopes on nothing," proclaimed Goethe, "and masterful minds in all ages have never done otherwise." This unspoken thought gives to all truly great men their manifest superiority over the brainless, vociferating herd. The common people have always had to be befooled with some written or wooden or golden idol, some constitution, declaration, or gospel. Consequently, the majority of them have ever been mental thralls, living and dying in an atmosphere of strong illusion. They are befooled and hypnotized even to this hour, and a large proportion of them must remain so until time is no more. Indeed, the masses of mankind are but the sediment from which all the more valuable elements have been long ago distilled. They are totally incapable of real freedom, and if it was granted to them, they would straightway vote themselves a master or a thousand masters within 24 hours. Mastership is right. Mastership is natural. Mastership is eternal, but only for those who cannot overthrow it and trample it beneath their hoofs. It is not a fact that in actual life, the ballot box votes of 10 million subjective personalities are as thistle down to the balance when weighed against the far-seeing thought and material prowess of, say, 10 strong silent men. 6. It is notorious, universally so, that the blackest falsehoods are ever decked out in the most brilliant and gorgeous regalia. Clearly, therefore, it is the brave man's duty to regard all sacred things, all legal things, all constitutional things, all holy things, with more than usual suspicion. "I deny and I affirm" is the countersign of material freedom. "I believe and I obey" is the shibboleth of serfage. Belief is a flunky, a feminine. Doubt is a creator, a master. He who denies fundamentals is in triple armor clad. Indeed, he is invulnerable. On the other hand, it has been said that every belief, every philosophy, has some truth in it. But so we might add, has every insanity. Strong men are not deterred from pursuing their aim by anything. They go straight to the goal, and that goal is beauty, wealth, and material power. The mission of power is to control and exploit the powerless, for to be powerless is to be criminal. The world would indeed be a house of horrors if all men were good and all women padlocked. As far as human searchlights have yet penetrated into the darkness that enshrouds the origin of nations, we see the subduers and the subdued, the plebeians and the patricians, the chiefs who governed and the vassals who obeyed. And there is nothing in the most modern social developments or these deedless days to warrant any belief that this ancient and natural division of human animals into castes of superiors and inferiors, sovereigns and serfs, can ever be dispensed with. The slave owner's whip cracked from the beginning, and it will crack till the day of doom. In every kingdom, republic, and empire on earth, we have, in one disguise or another, the master and the slave, the ruler and the ruled. In the course of centuries, names alone have changed. Essentials have remained the same. Forms of royalty may alter, but kings can never die. There was mastership at the beginning, and there will be mastership to the end. We build, but as our fathers built. Change is not progress, nor numbers advance. Everyone who would be free must show his power. Everyone who would be free must show his power. Unalterable remains the basis of all earthly greatness. He who exalteth himself shall be exalted, and he who humbleth himself shall be righteously trodden beneath the hoofs of the herd. The humble are only fit for dogs' meat. Bravery includes every virtue, humility every crime. He who is afraid to risk his life must never be permitted to win anything. Human rights and wrongs are not determined by justice, but by might. Disguise it as you may, the naked sword is still kingmaker and kingbreaker as of yore. All other theories are lies and lures. Therefore, if you would conquer wealth and honor, power and fame, You must be practical, grim, cool, and merciless. You must ride to success, by preference, over the necks of your foemen. Their defeat is your strength. Their downfall is your uplifting. Only the powerful can be free, and power is non-moral. Life is real. Life is earnest, and neither heaven nor hell its final goal. And love and joy and birth and death and fate and strife shall be forever. This earth is a vast whirl of warring atoms, a veritable revolving cockpit. Each molecule, each animal fights for its life. You must fight for yours or surrender. Look well to it, therefore, that your beaks and spurs, your fangs and claws are as sharp as steel and as effective as science can make them. Though the survival of the strongest is the logic of events, yet personal cowardice is the great vice of our demoralized age. Cowardice is corroding the brain and blood of our race, but men have learnt to disguise this terrible infirmity. Behind the canting wine of humanity and goodness, words flow instead of blood, and terrible insults are exchanged instead of terrible blows. How rich this degenerate world is in small, petty-souled good-for-nothings who are forever excusing their infantile ineptitude behind some plausible phrase, some conventional make-believe. Courage, I say, courage, not goodness, is the great desideratum. Courage that requires neither tin horns, nor calcium lights, nor brass bands, nor shouting multitudes to call it into effective action, but courage that goes its way alone, as undauntedly as when it marches to victory or death amid the menacing stride of armed and bannered legions. Courage that delights in danger. Courage that knows not despair. Courage that proudly, defiantly smiles on death. Courage that regards with equal loathing the multitude's mad howls of hate, its stupid hee-haws, and its stridulating, tremendous applause. Courage that asks no quarter, even with the knife at its throat. Courage that is stiff-necked, unyielding, sullen, pitiless. Courage that never falters, never retreats. Courage that looks down with supreme disdain upon all slave regulations, upon all rights and wrongs, upon all good and evil. Courage that has made up its mind to conquer or perish. That is the kind of courage this world lacks. That is the kind of courage that aids by active cooperation the survival of the fittest, the survival of the best. That is the kind of courage that has never turned a master's mill. That is the kind of courage that never will turn it. That is the kind of courage that will die rather than turn it. When Zvitdag came to the enclosure, the gate of the burg was shut. For it was customary to ask leave to come in and see, or take part in the war games. Svipdag did not take that trouble, but broke open the gate and rode into the yard. Queen Yissa said, "This man will be welcome here."
Well, I'm very happy to have found a young man on the internet who reads much better than I do, because I'm going to continue playing these chapter by chapter for you. And you can go up there on the internet, Might is Right, and find it if you want to listen to it before. But anyhow, great stuff. Much better than Christ Insanity's Bible. In fact, there's no comparison. Well, let's see. The second, that was yesterday, was the commemoration of the 1836 when the whites declared their independence at the Alamo in Texas. Too bad they didn't remain a state, and too bad they didn't retain their white culture. They're letting it go to the mestizos, the swarthy mixed-race mestizos. Well, boys and girls, I have an assignment for you. Yes, I do. Go to Netflix, if you've got the service of Netflix, or go to a well-stocked video store and rent the film Double, or The Double, with Richard Gere. It's the best stuff I've seen him do. It is very, very important to watch this film. You'll get a lot out of it. And then you can get back to me and tell me what you got out of it. If you like espionage and spying and all that kind of stuff, this is the film for you. Well, this is interesting information from the past. Los Angeles police are investigating and testing a knife that was found in the now-demolished house that used to be owned by O.J. Simpson, the former football player who was acquitted of the murder of his wife, decapitation, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend in 1995, according to the Los Angeles Times. LAPD Captain Andrew Neiman said that according to the person who handed it in was a retired LAPD officer. The knife was given to him while he was working a private security job for a film crew across the road from Simpson's former Rockingham property a number of years ago. Police obsessed for years over finding the knife used to kill Simpson's ex-wife and her friend Ron Goldman. Detectives are now testing this knife to see where it may have come from. Neiman said the inquiry is still in its early stages. Well, that's interesting. Well, I see they're still going on and on about David Duke and Donald. I'm telling you, this is getting pretty boring. It's not even funny anymore. But, you know, they're holding that thing about Duke against him, which is ridiculous because Duke's got as much power as a pissant. But remember back when Reagan was running for office in 1980 and I was running for United States Congress and I was still leading a Klan in California. Well, guess what? All the Klans around the country and every Klansman that I ran into, outside the state at least, were supporting Ronald Reagan, the Republican. Yeah, they were endorsing him all over the country. I was the only Klan leader that didn't. I would not endorse the bastard because I knew too much about him. And too much about him has come out since then, too. So if they're going to get on Donald for having an endorsement from David Duke and his phony doctorate and all that kind of stuff, well, let's go back and see about all those Klans that supported Reagan back in 1980. How about that? Boy, these Christ insanity people know no shame. Over in the Ukraine, which has been torn up pretty good, on a recent frosty morning, a group of evangelical ministries or missionaries piled out of a Volkswagen minivan to meet elderly and poor people who had gathered on a roadside here. They handed out loaves of bread and Bibles. You got to take the Bibles to get the bread, baby, declaring Jesus wants peace. Oh, well, how about all the evangelicals that support blowing the shit out of the country? In the distance, the fighting that had been rattling along the front all morning picked up. A pastor, Yevgeny Medvedev, raised his hands and said, "Let us pray, and all these problems will go away." By the time he had wrapped up the Lord's Prayer, loud explosions were echoing through the town. "Deliver us from evil," he said, finishing with an amen, just as a shell exploded in the distance, and he ran his ass off to get in his Volkswagen and get out of there. The Ukrainian-held town of apartments, blocks, and one-story homes outside the rebel capital of Donetsk has become a hotspot not only for fighting but also for saving souls. Yeah. As Ukrainian forces and Russian-backed separatists carry on an almost forgotten fight in half-deserted towns like this one, despite a year-old ceasefire Several well-organized evangelical groups are staging a campaign of their own. Based on their accounts and evidence seen here, they're finding a fertile ground for their efforts. Yeah. What other entertainment do the people have? Mariinka, the town, lies in what the Ukrainians call the gray zone between or close to the positions of government troops and Russian-backed rebels. While virtually everyone in eastern Ukraine has suffered in the nearly 2 years of the war, residents of these areas have endured even more hardship. About 6,000 civilians, including 350 children, remain in Mariinka, about half of the pre-war population. Two schools remain open, though kindergartens, not much in demand in a place where nobody works, have closed. But we got plenty of Christ insanity people running around handing out bread if you'll take the Bible. You don't get the bread, you don't take the Bible. You got to have that propaganda. Well, I see that a man in southern Russian city of Stavropol, faces potential jail time for writing atheist comments on a website. In 2014, Viktor Krasnov, 38, posted on social media a message that equated the Bible to a collection of Jewish fairy tales. Well, it is. He is being persecuted under a law that criminalizes speech deemed offensive to the beliefs of the Russian Orthodox Christians. Well, we've got a problem there. Quote, if I say that the collection of Jewish fairy tales entitled the Bible is completely bull, that's that, at least for me, Krasnov wrote in an exchange with VK.com, adding, there is no God. For that, authorities apparently forced him to spend a month in a psychiatric ward to determine whether he was sane before launching into the case last month. No, I think the people that are putting him in the psychiatric ward are the ones that need to be in the psychiatric ward. His attorney told Agence France-Presse that his client was simply an atheist who had also made fun of the Halloween and the Yiddish holidays in the same series of comments and wasn't specifically denigrating the Orthodox Christian belief. Well, I believe people should be able to denigrate anything they want. The law that has led to Krasnov getting placed in the dock was used to prosecute members of the agitprop punk band Pussy Riot, who stormed into a famous Moscow cathedral in 2012 to stage a controversial music video singing a song that criticized entrenched Russian President Vladimir Putin. Lighten up, Mr. Putin. Putin's specific brand of nationalism is steeped in religion, as well as overt ties to the Russian Orthodox Church. You go from one extreme to the other. You get communist Soviet Union, now back into the clutches of the Russian Orthodox Church. The head of the church, Patriarch Kirill, is a useful Putin ally and is increasingly seen as a proxy for the Kremlin interest. Wow. As my colleague Andrew Roth noted last year, there has also been an uptick in local activist courts pursuing cases against religious blasphemers and supposed extremists. In many instances, the authorities have dug into the individual's online history to find incriminating evidence. Quote, I don't know how you can treat social networking posts seriously, an opposition website quoted Krasnov as saying. Quote, looks like we need a law to protect atheists' feelings too. Well, that's why we got free speech over here in America. And if we didn't, I'd be in jail too. The Catholic Church or one of some of these Protestant churches, they'd haul me into jail. Oh boy, religion. causes most of the problems in the world. There's another one out of Russia. Russia's shrinking space for freedom of expression on the internet is set to constrict further Friday, as tough regulations go into effect that will give Russian authorities powerful oversight over the country's most read online personalities, including opposition bloggers and politicians. They don't have freedom of speech in Russia. The restrictions come as some of Russia's most prominent independent online news websites have been blocked or gutted in recent months, and at a crucial juncture in the Ukrainian conflict, which has raised tensions between Russia and the West to levels not seen since the Cold War. Well, the West should keep their nose out of it, out of everything. The internet in Russia had long been a largely uncensored arena, even as the nation's television stations and newspapers towed by ever stricter Kremlin line. The new regulations, bloggers and activists say, will encourage online self-censorship and will create new risks for those who advocate contrarian viewpoints. Well, that's like I say, our enemy, the state. Don't make any difference where you're at. It's our enemy, the state. Let's do that pessimist guide to history again. See how bad it was back then. Fire in the British Parliament in 1834 at 6:30 p.m. on October 16th. A fire broke out near the entrance of the House of Parliament in London, and within a half hour, the two houses were engulfed in flames. Among the irreplaceable items lost in the blaze was the original warrant for the execution of King Charles I. 1835, Darwin witnesses a Chilean earthquake. On February 20th, the naturalist Charles Darwin, ashore while his ship HMS Beagle was anchored off the Chilean coast, lay down to rest in an apple orchard. Suddenly, the ground beneath him began to shake. Staggering to his feet, he could barely stand up, and later described the feeling that the world, the very emblem of all that is solid, had moved beneath our feet like a crust over a fluid. Even so, Darwin had yet to realize the awesome destructive power of the earthquake. Later, he saw that the port of Talatuco looked as if 1,000 great ships had been wrecked. Battered ships and their cargoes, roofs of houses, and other debris lay piled up on the shore, and the town itself had been wrecked by the earthquake and tidal wave. The inland town of Concepcion was flattened within 6 seconds of the quake, as the ground buckled and tossed like a wild sea. The entire blocks of houses collapsed. Overall, some 5,000 persons died in the calamity. Charles Darwin, though horrified by the carnage, nevertheless used the experience of earthquake to speculate on a theory of the origin of the continents. Never let an opportunity pass. Yeah. Oh, I forgot all about it. I was invited to a campaign party for Donald Trump last night, and I went there, and it was very interesting. Yeah, I'm going to play. I recorded some of it for you, so you can listen to it.
As a matter of fact, back in September, me and Silk created the Ditch and Switch Now movement. We have a website where we had people going to switch their parties, if you were a Democrat or Independent, to switch your party to Republican so that you can vote for Donald Trump in the primaries, because we knew it was crucial. We saw the games that the GOP and the establishment and the media and everybody was trying to play.
That's right.
So we were trying to prepare people.
That's right.
You know, I want to say this to you. Let me say this to you. And I say this to you as a broadcast owner, okay? It is so important before you go on TV or you go anywhere that you make sure that there's some understanding that whomever is inviting you on, that you have a platform where you can tell your entire story. Because when you don't tell your entire story, people marginalize you and make assumptions. And so, you know, I felt something today when I was listening to you. You know, I said, there's something that's very genuine. There's a story here. And instead of bringing these young ladies on who are well-educated, well-read, well-spoken, let me just bring them on so we can hear their story, so they can tell their story instead of somebody trying to tell it in sound bites or for ratings.
Absolutely. When you're dealing with the left, when you're dealing with people like that, what they want to do is try to make Trump supporters look bad. They want to try to downgrade and downrate. So that's why they do that. It is all, they already have the talking points. We already know what the conversation is supposed to be. But when we get on these interviews, they want to get you with these hit pieces and these got you questions. Just so happened, they didn't get the memo about diamond and silk. We don't flow like that. We know that we're here for Donald J. Trump. That's who we're stopping for. That's who we're voting for. And that's it. We're here to tell our story about why we choose to stop for Donald Trump. And we always send them to diamondandsilk.com and let them know why we stop for Trump and why we feel like they need to ditch and switch their party so they can stop for Trump as well.
And then, you know what, sometimes in the African-American community, when you start thinking outside the box, they call you out of your name.
Yes.
You know, I hate to say this, but this is the truth, and I got to tell it like I see it. You know, African-American, we're one of the most racist group of people on earth. We want to talk about the white man. No, look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. Look at how we call our brothers and sisters out of their names when they start thinking outside the box and want to come off of that Democratic plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to point out every one of them. Whoever want to go,
yes,
get them off of that Democratic plantation and mindset, well, all we have to do is be headed the crumb.
Yes.
We're tired of voting for a system that keeps handing us the crumb and don't want to give us any type of opportunity. Bring in somebody like Donald Trump that can give us the ingredients and show us how to make a whole cake. And we don't just have to be handed
the crumbs.
We can have a slice of cake.
That's right.
What we're looking
we can
at.
Be part of America. We can stop segregating ourselves as black people and saying that this don't work for us. The American dream is obtainable. People is not going to give you the American dream. You have to go get it for yourself. And we feel that Donald Trump wants to bring opportunity to all Americans in order to be able to obtain the American dream so we can wake up from this American nightmare.
Right, yeah.
And what do you say to people when they see you, because they can't even, in their conscience, in their short-sightedness, they cannot even reconcile that you're supporting and advocating something that you believe every America that can make America great. You know what? I would not stand in your way, even though Trump is not the guy that I chose, Dr. Ben Carson. I would defend your right to support Trump or anybody else. Because listen, that's what people died for. They didn't say whom to vote for. They just said vote. That is your right. And you just did not come to this conclusion easily. So what do you say to people who say, oh, Donald Trump is paying them, they've been bought and paid for? How do you respond to those critics?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump is not paying us not one dime.
Mm-hmm.
We were stubborn for Trump before Trump even knew who we were. That's one thing. We're very passionate about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing this because we want this man to lead the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that it got a lot of attention. We didn't know we were going to get all this attention.
We didn't know
our mouth was going to get us into all of this here.
Well, you know
Listen,
that.
And this is how we are. People think we're acting. When you see us on the street, I'm talking just like this.
That's right.
You see me at a dinner table, if I'm passionate about something, this is how I'm acting, this is how I'm talking.
And when they hate, that's when Diamond and Silk,
we educate. That's when we educate. That's when we educate. And we may hear some in the black community, oh, well, you're acting ghetto. Well, what's ghetto is when I see our brothers gunning down another brother. Or when I see our sisters on TV calling another sister out of her name or fighting her on TV. Or when I see our women walking around here with AIDS and can't explain how they got it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see our young women out here with 6 and 7 babies and expect the government to take care of them, now that's ghetto.
Yes.
So you want to talk about ghetto, before you point the finger at me, make sure them three, look at them three fingers in that thumb that's pointing back
that's
at you
true.
And what
that's
you doing. Right. You done already made a name for yourself. The black community, we looking crazy. We looking crazy because we act like we don't know who we are. We're kings and we're queens. We ain't no slouch at home. It's time for us to wake up.
Yes.
That's what it's time for us to do.
And come up.
Come the up. And that's right.
Listen, one last, look, you know I've got to go to break and we got to come back and take some calls. Can we do that?
Yes, we can. Yes, we're going to be fine.
No, so let me raise this with you. Does it bother you that people label you the Trump girls? Is that your name and somebody just gave you that name?
Well, we know our name, and so anybody can say whatever they want to about us, because sticks and stones may break our bones, but names will never hurt us. So they can label us as who took, that they got us as the black people, the black African-American women,
yeah.
Stop for Trump girls.
The sister ads.
We're not sister ads. Yes. The Stop for Trump girls. You know, we the one that created the Stop for Trump. So they just took that and ran with it. So mm-hmm. when you hear, like, the news media, like CNN, who's on the stop for this one, or who's stopping for this,
yes.
they all got that from Diamond and Silk. So, you know, as a matter of fact, I don't get offended by it.
No,
I know who my name is.
We know who we are.
Yeah, we know who our name is.
So no one can name us, because
right.
we know who we are.
Absolutely.
You know, I want to say this to you before we go to break and come back. You know, I really appreciate the fact that you all are so secure. You know who you are, whose you are. You don't worry about what people say about you. You know, you could have made all kind of assumptions. Now, why is this brother, Mr. Williams, invited us on his show? We know he's for Dr. Carson, but you also know I'm conservative, too. So some of the grief that you guys get, I don't get it here, because this audience here is special, and I don't get it nearly as much as I used to, but I still get it, okay? The same
okay.
thing that people say about you. But I really want you to know, before we go to break and come back, I really wanted to invite you on to really introduce you to our audience and for people to get to know you for who you are instead of by somebody who's trying to define what you are.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
You know, I really appreciate the fact that you all are so secure. You know who you are, whose you are. You don't worry about what people say about you. You know, you could have made all kind of assumptions. Now, why is this brother, Mr. Williams, invited us on his show? We know he's for Dr. Carson, but you also know I'm conservative, too. So some of the grief that you guys get, I don't get it here, because this audience here is special, and I don't get it nearly as much as I used to, but I still get it, okay? The same
okay.
thing that people say about you. But I really want you to know, before we go to break and come back, I really wanted to invite you on to really introduce you to our audience and for people to get to know you for who you are instead of by somebody who's trying to define what you are.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you for the opportunity.
So what we're going to do, that's right, we've got the Trump girls on. Diamond and Silk are biological sisters from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I want you guys to know I'm from Marion, South Carolina. Standing with the solid majority, we're going to take your calls when we come back. Don't go away.
Well, there you go. I got invited over to that party last night, the Trump girls. Yeah, they're touring the country from South Carolina. They're for Trump, man. And they let everybody know it, too. And you better not mess with those girls, because they both weigh about 200 pounds. Well, that's it for today. This is Friday. I'll be back with you on Moon's Day with a whole lot of other stuff that... maybe even a little more crazy. Terrible Tommy, off and clear. And 14-5, especially 5. I've got nothing to say.
There ain't nobody out there gonna mess with me, 'cause I'm big and hard and battle scarred and getting long in the tooth, desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. I've been chased, I've been bit. Yeah, I'm a like to shoot at me, but they miss. Yeah, I'm alone. And I ain't never been trapped and died him to people the things they got me cornered at last. I've been and white dogs to some country, some rock and roll. Listen now, boy, you don't have to quit your howling soul. Staying up all night and chasing lassies by the moon. Staying up all day on the porch playing guitar tunes. Yeah, I'm alone. And I no longer run with the pack. Yeah. I don't ever look.